everybody, and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show, streaming live on BBS from California, and also syndicating to 100 other stations globally, including iHeart and iTunes, which is where you can find the replays of this show. I am delighted to have a guest with me today that I just met recently, and the connection has been phenomenal, and I am so looking forward to interviewing her and sharing her story. I'll formally introduce her in just a moment. I'm joined today by Tristan Bliss. So if you haven't listened to this show before, a little bit of background. The show is all about showcasing amazing women. It's women who I've connected with who've typically risen from some sort of tragedy to triumph. They've risen and now they are doing amazing things in the world. Many of them are heart-centered entrepreneurs. They're mission-inspired. They are living into their vision and purpose. And I just love connecting with the energy of these beautiful women, because any woman who is listening to this radio show, if you're in a spot right now where you're wondering, oh, I don't know if I can keep going, I don't know if I believe in myself, if there is any doubt whatsoever, that's the work that I do, is helping women to elevate their confidence. So I'm the author of the best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. I'm also, in addition to being a best-selling author, I'm also a speaker, mentor, coach, and I work specifically with women, elevating confidence, removing doubt, increasing sales mastery, which of course is so important in this COVID time, and also helping women to really step into their maximum potential. Mostly it's women entrepreneurs with mission-inspired businesses. So that's the work I do globally. And then for every copy of my book that is purchased, I actually donate one back to a women's shelter foundation or not-for-profit. So I love what I do, and I'm passionately sharing these beautiful stories. And I hope that today you will be inspired, because I certainly was. So today I'm introducing you to an amazing friend of mine, Tristan Bliss. Hello, Tristan.
Hello, Yvonne. Thank
welcome,
you.
Welcome, welcome. I want to showcase Tristan's story today, because Tristan has recently set up a new organization, which I'll let her tell you about. But she is a woman who has herself personally risen through some significant tragedy and is now on the surviving side of this episode and is now ready to share a little bit more about her story, what happened, and what triggered her to start this beautiful new enterprise. So I'm curious to dive in, Tristan. Tell me a little bit more about, you know, what was your childhood like when you were growing up, and how did that maybe lead to some of the decisions that you made later in life, which have been the impetus for this new vision that you've created? And then we'll get to talk about that a little bit later.
Absolutely. Once again, thank you, Yvonne. And yeah, there's a myriad of different stories that I could go into, but I guess to surmise everything into a condensed version of my life, and that'll save us all a lot of time.
Well, we have an hour.
So. A lot of tears too, because we don't want to be crying today. but I, as a lot of people can probably resonate with and have very similar backgrounds and stories. I grew up in a household, in an entire family actually, where alcoholism was a very strong, prominent focal point within the dynamics of my family. It was very generational.
Yes.
So it wasn't, you know, myself, my sisters, who were exposed to this. It was brought in from generations of abuse, alcoholism, and a pattern of behavior. So with my upbringing, I was primarily raised in a single family home. My stepfather was there, who I absolutely adored. Unfortunately, he passed away when I was 15, and that instance in itself was very traumatic for me. He died of a heart attack, and that just created such a massive hole in my life. He was truly one of the only male figures that I had to have a role model of what, you know, to really look for in a man, and how a man is supposed to be the protector and a good solid figure, especially for little girls growing up. However, though, alcoholism and abuse were very prominent in my home. And there was a lot of fighting between my parents. And when those episodes weren't happening, there was a lot of abuse from my mother towards myself and my siblings. So it was a perpetual roller coaster of just, you know, and we knew that that wasn't the norm, but we were helpless to do anything.
Yep.
And, you know, as so many children are, and I was 16 years old when I really made that concrete decision in my mind that this was definitely not going to be the way that I was going to raise my children when, if and when I were to have a family. I've been very fortunate to have four amazing human beings, and they are all just the highlight of my life. And they will probably tell you I'm way too overprotective, I'm way too biased, and everything else that, you know, a very overbearing mom, which I tend to be at times, is. But I did take a very different stand on how I was going to parent my children, how I was going to manage my emotions, how I was going to relate to society and, you know, be more outgoing, have a strong vision for my life, and wanting to persevere above what I was used to seeing. I grew up in poverty. I grew up in a mountain of disparity that, you know, a lot of people, as I earlier said, can probably resonate with.
You grew up in Canada, right?
I did. I grew up in Toronto, Ontario.
Right.
I have a lot of my family who are in Northern Ontario, beautiful area. And so I was very blessed to have the best of both worlds, as I call it, growing up in the heart of downtown Toronto, in the housing projects, nonetheless. But having that opportunity, my grandparents lived in a small community in Northern Ontario. And I was very fortunate as a child to be able to have that experience, because I had a plethora of friends and opportunities to see different things where so many of the people that I grew up in Toronto with didn't have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, their version of going to the country was a walk through Hyde Park.
Yeah. Well, even in the first 10 minutes here, I'm feeling, you know, again, I'm feeling that strong connection to what you're sharing. I know that you haven't read my book yet. I do talk about some of my upbringing too, where my dad was injured in World War II. He got a bullet in Dunkirk and came back from the war with PTSD as a very, very angry man. And he literally drained the dignity right out of my mom. I mean, even though she was a working professional when they met, he very quickly overtook the relationship, became the significant dominant figure. And literally I watched him drain the energy right out of her. She was so nervous being around him. We never had a full set of china. So there's some similarity in growing up in these repressed households. And I always find it so interesting whether or not it decreases our desire for a richer, more meaningful life, or whether it stirs us up to sort of set that spark on fire. And in your case, obviously it did. You decided, I don't want to create this kind of an environment for my kids either. And obviously, you know, very tragic to have your stepfather, who was that bright light, passing away when you were 15. It's interesting too how you describe yourself, and you say your kids would probably say you're overprotective. I did a little exercise a while ago with my some of my close friends, some colleagues, clients, and my son. And it was one of those exercises where you ask them to describe you. You know, how do I show up in 3 to 5 words? And I thought it was really interesting that my son said first word out of his mouth was hardworking, and then it was secondarily loving and a few other things. But it was a very impactful moment when he said hardworking first and loving second. I was like, uh-oh, it's time to get those things in the right order. So it's right. Interesting how our kids reflect back to us what it is that we're creating. So thank you for sharing that part so far. So how did all that impact you as a teenager?
Yeah, as a teenager, I always had a very strong sense of my own individuality. And I didn't mold myself to the expectation of what my friends were doing or what anybody else was doing. I had visualized, I wanted to be a lawyer by the time I was 16, 17. I was very determined that was going to be my career path. However, unfortunately, due to a lot of the trauma that I was experiencing within my own home and, being within my mid-teens, I really started realizing I need to kind of make an exodus from the circumstances that I was dealing with in our own home. So I had moved out by the time I was 17 years old, started working full time, had to quit high school. So after having to, really kind of step into an adult position before I was even ready to, I still had that goal in mind. I knew that I wanted to pursue the rest of my education, go off to college, university. But there was so many disruptions within that time, and not having a strong foundation of really how to go out into the world, how to execute things with confidence, how to, even recognize a solid and good relationship and what all of the components of that were supposed to be in my life. I ended up in very bad relationships right from the onset. And that was just a prelude of what was to come down the road. So my daughter was born when I was 19. And she's now 31 this year. Amazing.
Where does the time go?
I know. So I hopped out of being a child right into being an adult and right into motherhood. And that was really when I had realized, okay, there's so much more that I need to be able to contribute, not to my own life, but now my child's life. Mm. And there was just coming out of an abusive home, jumping straight into an abusive relationship and not being able to figure out how am I supposed to handle all of this. By the time I was 21, we had already separated, going through an awful custody battle. I essentially had my daughter taken from me. There was a lot of chaos, a lot of ganging up on me, and I was ganging up on myself too. I had lost all confidence in myself, lost all hope in myself. And that just became a continual pattern for all throughout my 20s. And it was not, there was never a point though where I ever said, I'm not valuable enough to have a more successful life. Mm-hmm. I would get angry. And at that point, my spirituality wasn't very strong then. I didn't have a lot of guidance for my spiritual structure. But that later on in life really is what has brought me to where I am now.
So what was that point, excuse me, Tristan, that spirituality did show up and that spark of knowing that you had a deeper purpose and that that was really where you wanted to focus your energy? When was that? How recently?
Well, I'll just go back a little bit. The first time I had any kind of spiritual encounter where I knew that I had a deeper mission, I knew that I was going to be recognized for helping people in a magnificent and a very large way. I was 22 years old, and it was a woman who randomly stopped me in Toronto and had a very brief conversation to me, and she had psychic abilities. She was incredibly gifted. I later met her years later, and she said to me that afternoon, though, she said, "Your name is not going to be the same as it is now, but it's going to be well known." And she said, "And I see you on like magazine covers, and you're going to be helping people all over the world." And I thought, well, that's really strange. You know, I mean, I couldn't possibly imagine how this would even materialize, never mind, you know, me having an impact where there's going to be any kind of recognition of little old me. She told me as well, I would write a book. Mm. Now, jump ahead 20 years, I did write a book.
Well, you've written two, haven't you?
I've written, yes, and I'm working on a third right now, actually. So one of these days, that book will be completed.
You've written Financial Feathers from Heaven, Rebound from Trauma to Personal and Financial Abundance, which sounds like a fascinating book, and also the book Your Childhood Zillionaire. Which one came first?
Financial Feathers from Heaven came first.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about that and the impetus for that.
Absolutely. That was just at the tail end of me leaving a very abusive, my last marriage that I was in for 12 years. We were married for 9, together for 12. And throughout the last part, from 2016 to 2018, is when I really knew that I had to, I was becoming so angry with the lack of help that was available for women who were living in domestic violence and abuse. And I had done my research online. I had been looking relentlessly for any kind of content that I could possibly find that gave a blueprint of how to have financial success, how to have anything, a lifeline to give me a resource to get out of my marriage, right, to leave safely. And that's when I kind of had the realization, if it's going to happen, I have to create it.
Yep. If it's going to be, it's up to me. I forget whose quote that is, but.
Exactly. But yes, absolutely. And so I had, I was working with another fella at the time who was based out of Texas, and he was very integral in guiding me in the direction of, first of all, how to write a book, how to format, structure, how to be conversational, but how to put all of your thoughts into a book, each chapter, each page that resonated with people in a very conversational tone.
Right.
And I just started doing that. I just started talking into a recorder, and that really is how the book came to be. But the essence of Financial Feathers from Heaven is to help elevate women in their awareness of, first of all, how we got here in the first place. Mm. Because that's always the big question. How did I end up? You know, because we never, as a child, say, oh, I can't wait to grow up and be abused.
Exactly.
That's never a thing that even enters a child's mind, yeah. Nor is it, you know, as from the abuser's standpoint, as a child, do they ever grow up and say, oh, I can't wait to grow up, have a wife and children, and hurt them?
Yeah.
That's not something that children have in their beautiful, fresh little minds. So to get to that point, it takes a process of understanding. First of all, A, it's not your fault. We are, for the most part, conditioned to have a certain mindset, a certain belief system, a certain understanding of how relationship dynamics work and look.
Right.
And, you know, one of the primary things that, and I said this earlier, that really stems or pushes, I think, people into abusive situations, whether it's a male or a female, because there's men out there who are dealing with as much domestic violence and abuse as women are. Unfortunately, it's not talked about as much, and there's not as many resources.
Right.
However, from a female standpoint, if we are brought into this world with a cluster of our family or our society that is not supportive, that is not healthy, that doesn't have strong communication skills, that doesn't have strong relationship value skills, then it's an unfortunate thing because we repeat those patterns.
Of course.
Even though we choose not to, right?
We assume that that is the normal.
Right.
Yeah, much exactly. As I did with my dad, too. I mean, I assumed that every father was strict and cold and very disciplined, in a very discipline-oriented. And in fact, he had a very, you know, what I now come to recognize as a blueprint personality, very structured, very rigid, and that was how he liked to be. And I didn't, which is what caused me to be out of the house so much. So I call it a house, not a home, because it was a shelter structure, but it certainly wasn't a loving, warm environment that I look forward to spending time in.
Right.
As much as you did.
I resonate with that completely because that's what I was like.
Yep.
I was labeled as the black sheep of the family, as the bad child.
I was the rebel.
I was too. I was definitely the rebel. You know, however, I find it ironic, though. I mean, I didn't get into trouble as a teenager. I didn't fall into any of the typical patterns that a lot of teenagers do. I knew that I couldn't be in that environment, so I did everything in my power to stay as far away from it as long as I could.
Yeah, well, that certainly is a lot, I'm sure, of the trigger that inspired you to start looking at ways to help other, you know, people, but women in particular, living in domestic violence and abuse. Certainly this whole topic of, how do you break free, I can so resonate with, because as I say in my book too, it's really about creating choice. And when we have, money doesn't give us happiness necessarily, but it does create more choice. And then with that choice, we can choose to, go to great places on the planet, have more kids. It's ease. It's not creating stress, because if you're worrying constantly about, how you're paying your bills, that's not a great energy to live in. It's very stressful. And for women who are supported primarily by the income that the husband brings in, especially if there's kids involved, to just uproot and take your kids and just run. I mean, that's a really, really hard decision to make, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely it is. And, unfortunately, I was put in that situation a few times throughout my last marriage.
Mm.
Excuse me. My son still, makes reference to his memory of us having to be in the woman's shelter.
Mm.
And we literally had to leave in the middle of the night. I had pre-packed, a basket of clothes so that it wouldn't be noticeable that we were leaving, and, take as few things as possible, put them in the trunk of the car and leave while he was sleeping. I mean, those were the things. And it kind of reminded me of, you know, back then, even one of the things that kept going through my mind was, first of all, fear. But second of all, that movie that Farrah Fawcett did many, many years ago, The Burning Bed.
Yep.
And, you know, it's an awful thing to even have to have something that traumatic come into our psyche and, you know, even be a part of our thought process. Right. Of how severe abuse could be and what those triggers do to people. And that's a terrifying thought, but I thought, I have to get out of here now. I have to get my son away from this. My younger children, my older children, they were already teenagers at this point, and they could not stand living in the house anymore. They went to live with their father. So it was that dysfunctional.
Yeah. So you, at one point, I think you mentioned that you lost everything, including your son, dealing with the courts, custody battles, pleading with somebody to finally listen to you, refusing to surrender to narcissistic abuse, rebuilding your life, reestablishing yourself after losing everything and being close to homelessness. So August 2020, what was happening then?
August 2020 is, it was the long weekend. I had already been away from my son. I was going through courts. We had a very challenging time just trying to have a relationship with my child. There was a lot of interference from his father, regardless of what court orders said. It was like he was walking right through those court orders. You know, they didn't mean a thing. So I had a lot of challenges on my hands. First of all, being away from my son was the most traumatizing thing I had ever had to go through. But keeping my faith and keeping my spirit alive with the knowing that I am a great mom. I am a loving mom. And there's nothing I wouldn't do for my children's happiness. So I kept fighting. I refused to give in. I refuse to allow the emotional, mental, verbal, psychological abuse to continue. I did everything in my power. I had to, I must have received within a 2-year period of time over 250 emails. Text messages alone were probably up in the hundreds somewhere. I had to block the father in order to maintain my sanity, but and rely solely on my lawyer to help me get the victory and the vindication that I was looking for. Because what happens so often, especially when you're dealing with narcissistic abuse, the narcissist doesn't realize that they have a problem. Mm. They don't see their behavior as dysfunctional. And because of that, it's very hard to convince anybody else that you're dealing in that much abuse. Because to the rest of the world, a narcissist is the most gentle, loving. They're a master of, you know, putting on a disguise and really living that facade to be so convincing to the rest of the world. But when you back a narcissist into the corner, they start to unravel. And I had to allow this process of him unraveling all on his own to happen. And it took 2 years, but the final straw was just by sheer happenstance, I was able to get my son back because of the bad behavior of my ex-husband towards my little boy. So it was, I got a call at 9 o'clock, August 3rd. It was the long weekend. And it was a police officer saying, your son is here at your daughter's house and he wants to come and be with you.
And how old is he then?
Aiden was 13 at the time.
13, okay.
Yeah, so it was traumatizing to, first of all, get that kind of a phone call. Scary. I knew that my son was scared, but it was such a relief at the same time. And I was just thanking God and saying, thank you for hearing me. Thank you for giving me my baby back.
So obviously there's a lot of lessons that are probably talked about in your book, Financial Feathers from Heaven, Rebounding from Trauma to Personal and Financial Abundance, about recognizing the behaviors and then maybe some strategies about how to get away. And then also the importance, obviously, of building up enough financial resources to be able to make that decision. It's time to go. I feel that I can go, not safely necessarily, but I feel that I now can make that decision. So what are some of the top three lessons when you think about those experiences that you want to share with women that are listening?
Well, number one, know your environment, know your circumstances very well. And each person who lives in an abusive relationship, they know all too well what the triggers are of their abuser.
Right.
So number one thing is, when you are making a plan to leave, never, ever tell the abuser that that is what you're planning on doing. That puts you in, that just changes the dynamics.
Yeah.
Radically. And if you just try to maintain your sense of normalcy, your day-to-day schedule, don't change anything up too radically, because abusers are monitoring every single thing that the person that they're victimizing is doing.
Yeah.
So that's the number one thing, is do not make an announcement that you're leaving. That is how women and children, unfortunately, the abuse escalates, and yep. Sometimes it escalates to a very tragic ending. When you are planning your execution, be sure to have at least a week's worth of clothes tucked away somewhere, bring it to a friend's house. Make sure that you have all of your identification, your children's identification, and anything else that you know you're going to need. Even if you don't have a financial safety net at this point, having those key pieces of ID for yourself and your children are going to be imperative. You need to have that. A lot of times, bringing it to a friend's house, even putting it in a locker. I know that right now it's kind of challenging because we're dealing with COVID. I different places throughout the world or different places throughout each state or province are in lockdown. You don't have access to those types of facilities right now. But putting your belongings in a safe place, to know that you've got it there when you do want to make that move. And do not tell your friends and family what you're going to do. That is the worst mistake so many women make, is sharing with their friends and family. Well, the first thing that the abuser is going to do is contact those very people that you have told.
Exactly.
So you cannot, you've got to be very strategic. You've got to be very quiet and secretive until you have successfully left the circumstances, your home, left the abuser. That's, I have to say, the easy part.
Make a plan, yeah.
Yeah. The hard part is once you've left.
Yeah.
And getting that support from key people, and that, you know, we would hope are going to be advocates for us. But definitely go to a woman's shelter, your local woman's shelter, if you have no other alternative of a place to go. And I wouldn't even recommend that you go to a woman's shelter in the city that you live in. There's so many situations where the abuser knows where you're going. No matter how protected and secure a lot of these facilities are, if the abuser knows that you're there, they're going to be waiting there.
Yep. You'll
go to an alternate city if that is what you need to do. But seek legal advice right away. Don't wait. There's all kinds here in Canada. There's legal aid. In the US, there's legal aid as well. I know in different countries, they are really putting a lot of emphasis and resources that are helping women or anybody who's dealing with domestic violence and abuse for that matter, have access to these resources. So use them.
Right. And is there any insights from, you know, fighting with the courts, to having the legal system supporting you, like anything that you've learned there that is helpful to share?
You've got to have a very strong, consistent story. Mm. You can't waver. That is one thing, and not that I did, but see, my situation was quite different because there was restraining orders and things like that in place, and it prevented a lot of my access to my son because mm. these things were in place. They were necessary, yes, but they also made it very challenging to have any sort of access granted to me, to my child, through the courts. However, over time, what the courts definitely want to see is that you are making a valiant effort to heal yourself, to heal your children. Counseling is critical, especially in the early stages of leaving any kind of violence. Counseling is absolutely a must. And when the courts see that you're making those kind of strides, those efforts to heal yourself, heal your children, put yourself in a better mental state, and really making great effort to build your life back up and using as many of the social resources as well as the legal resources to be able to do that. Their primary goal is always what's in the best interest of the children.
Yeah.
Especially when there's, you know, and 9 times out of 10, there's children involved.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness for that part. Although, you know, when I hear some of the, and yours isn't, you know, your story is not the only story where I've heard that the orders are in place and yet they're not being honored. They're not being listened to, paid attention to, and yet there doesn't seem to be enough support to actually give those orders some teeth. In many cases where women have been awarded things and then it just doesn't come to fruition because the abuser doesn't listen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, that is typically the case. The courts are aware of this, but there's not enough resources I have experienced myself personally that really looks at the dysfunction breakdown and the healing process, because you don't just get PTSD from being in a war zone. You walk out of domestic violence and abuse with severe PTSD. And this is one thing I didn't even realize I was suffering from, was PTSD, but I had to go through my own internal journey. That's where my spirituality came in so critically. I have a deep faith in God, but I also have a deep faith in, you know, just in many different aspects of spirituality. It's not the, you know, being in a congregation, going to church, yes, that's a wonderful thing. However, that can sometimes backfire on you as well. And this is one thing I definitely experienced within the Christian church. They advocate so strongly for marriage success. However, when it comes to abuse and dysfunction in the home, they've got very limited resources and they do not do a sufficient job to encourage the abuser to get help.
Yeah.
It becomes the woman's problem. Well, you must be submissive to your husband. I don't think so.
Me neither. And I, you know, as I said, the impetus for writing my book was watching my mom literally have her dignity drained right out of her. So I'm a believer in that. We're on the same page there. So all of these circumstances have no doubt inspired your passion for helping women in particular to have the resources to be able to make a choice to step away and have the resources to support them. So this has now led to the evolution of Global Inbound Closers, GIC, your new venture. So tell me a little bit more about what this is about. How does GIC play an active role in helping people to escape from this domestic violence and abuse situations that they're in?
Absolutely. I'll just share a quick little story about that. As I said, in the book, I really wanted to have a focal point of how women would be able to utilize resources that gives them access to funds. I couldn't understand how to do that, though. I had, and this is an opportunity for me to do a rewrite on this book as well, which I'm actually in the process of doing. But I couldn't understand it for 2-3 years. From the time I wrote the book and published it and up until December 4th of 2020, it had been something so deeply in the back of my mind. How can I help women? Because I myself needed to have that lifeline. How do I help women achieve this magnificently huge goal that sometimes seems so overwhelming? December 4th, 6:30 in the morning, I'm having my coffee, and it came to me just like that, like butter. It flowed out of me. I swear to God, it was a spiritual download. And it was the most beautiful experience. I can't even really describe in words what that felt like when I just magically, immediately, instantaneously had this download of everything that GIC encompasses. And within 20 minutes, it was the entire company created. 20 minutes. I ran and got a pen and paper. I started writing all of this down. And now I'm looking at this from like a 10,000 foot perspective and seeing how all of the intricacies and the inner workings of this company would be put together. And it was so crystal clear. And that could only happen by God. I honestly believe that. So that was a really big awakening moment for me. I ran to my computer. By 2 o'clock that afternoon, I had the entire website built.
Fabulous.
It was that fluid. It really was. But I believe that when you have something that is other than us, when we get out of our way, we can have the most miraculous things happen. And that's exactly what happened December 4th, 2020, at 6:30 in the morning.
I've interviewed so many women over the past couple of years, and several times I've heard the similarities with getting the download. I mean, I also experienced downloads when I was getting up 5 o'clock every morning to do half an hour of meditation and then write my book. It was like the words that needed to come in just sort of flowed through me. So, I was the author, but I certainly don't claim to be the creator of all of it.
Exactly.
But this concept that, you know, our little minds can only visualize so much, and it takes a greater consciousness to support the how. How could all this fit together? You know what it is you want to do. You know what you have the experience and the deep understanding to bring to bear. You know, you understand the problem, the situation. How and what is the solution needs to come from a wider lens. So I'm so glad that you had that experience. So how are things evolving now? You've got your website up. You had a information session just earlier on this week talking a little bit about it. So tell the audience, what is it designed to do? How does it help women in particular?
Well, GIC was created to help coaches, course creators, entrepreneurs who offer high ticket products online, that they have an audience, a following of people who they're helping with whatever product or service or skills that they have. There's a myriad of different coaching platforms out there, and so many amazing coaches that, as you know yourself, that have a service to offer at a price point of $5,000 and above. Well, when you've got that program put together and you want to make sure you've got a reliable selling structure in place, you've got to rely on your own vices, basically, to create that sales team. So we have created GIC to be an internal, we have our call center, internal dashboard that is aligned with coaches to alleviate any of the hiring process of sales staff, management, monitoring, continual training, as well as the cost. And we have created an entire system that is, it consists of trained and certified sales agents who work for GIC. All of them work on commission. And it's a membership-based company. So we have our coaches who come in, our entrepreneurs who come in with a free membership. And we also, the other side of it, we have created free membership-based as well as free training-based for our sales agents to come on board and have a thriving job with GIC. So, and this was where the beauty of GIC really got my heart going, was that I was able to create jobs for women, men, all over the world. And they would be able to work at their own pace. They would be able to work in the safety of their own home. And they would have that security of knowing, I just need to pick up the phone, make a phone call, and speak with somebody and be passionate and consistent and caring about the products and the clients that we're serving, and all be able to make money. That was a huge aha moment for me, because that was it right there. I could employ people from anywhere around the world. I could have clients from anywhere around the world, allowing us to provide that sales structure for them, and having access to between 30 and 60 sales agents working for them personally every single day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And there's no risk to anybody, because they don't have any out-of-pocket expense until after we've made the sale for them. So it's a beautiful culmination of opportunity on so many different levels.
It's such an interesting model, because for the clients who have the high ticket items to sell, whether that's a course or a group program, etc., there's no risk for them, because there's no setup fee. They don't get to get billed until the sales representative has sold a product, which is a great way to check out this new service. Exactly. And then I imagine that the sales representatives are very highly motivated, because they are commission sales, and yet also because they're coming from that potentially that domestic abuse background, they're hungry to make change. They're also very motivated to build strong connections that are lasting connections. So they're not in it just to get one sale, because they know that you have a ready pipeline of clients, and also the stronger the connection is between them and the new client or potential client that they are bringing on board for your clients, that everybody wins. What a beautiful synergy. I love it. I'm excited to be sharing this story in particular, because when we come to the table with a heart-centered or mission-inspired business, it really fuels that passion, because as we know, you know, entrepreneurs, it's like launching a rocket, right? All the energy that you need to get it off the ground, to get it noticed, to get it really soaring into the air is a huge amount of energy. And if we don't have that driving passion inside, because it's something that has touched us deeply, that's where the mission energy really supports getting a new business launched. Not only that, but we anticipate as entrepreneurs, I mean, it's all about, that's the definition of an entrepreneur, right? It's risking everything for an idea that other people will buy into. And so when we have that focus and we can knit our story together and say, here's my background, here's why I'm doing this, here's how it works. It's just this beautiful triangulation that I love being in that energy. That's the kind of women that I love to support, mission-inspired focus. And then if there's some way that we can pay it forward, with my book, as I said, I do a buy one, give one. In this case, every time some of your sales representatives are being paid commissions, that in itself is the reward that will lead them to be able to have the freedom they desire. Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. And it is incredibly exciting. I love the energy that I'm seeing from the people coming into GIC, the agents, and how eager they are, how pliable they are, and they're just absorbing the content that has been put out there for them. I've created so much content and to support their journey with this new venture, whether it's their first time in sales. And that's the beauty of this, because it does provide that training. Whether it doesn't require that you have to have an extensive background in sales. And a lot of times when it comes to inbound closing, it's very conversational. So a lot of people who are very well versed in inbound sales training know it's almost better if you're coming in without a sales background, because you're essentially having to unlearn all of the information that you have previously learned coming out of that environment. Because when you're going into inbound sales, it is a very nurtured, very conversational, relationship building environment, and that's what we support.
Right.
So that really does in itself, and knowing that it's helping so many people as well, build up that level of confidence again,
mm-hmm.
having their platform, whether it's, you know, just having it one conversation at a time, but having conversations with people that they never would have met otherwise, and giving them opportunity to really hone in and establish such a beautifully well refined craft of communication. Mm. And that's so beautiful.
Can you talk a little bit about the certification process? Like how many hours of training do they need to go through to get certified as a GIC consultant, sales consultant?
Essentially, the training shouldn't be any more than 8 hours of training. So in terms of the modules and how they have been created, everything is very condensed. It's well packed with information, well packed with training, but it's condensed so it's not overwhelming.
Mm.
So going through each of the modules, there's 6 modules in the training process, and then you get to the exam. The exam is 1 hour long, or that's the time frame that's given. And most people, you know, they fly through the exam on their first shot. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of what we've created, we want to keep encouraging people regardless of where they're at. So we want to meet people where they're at and give them that opportunity. If they don't pass the first time, there's multitude of times that they can pass. But within that, it's also confidence building.
Right.
So we're going to be incorporating this beautiful bank program as well, which is going to have so much synergy with how we have already taken the approach. And, you know, that was the long-term vision, really, of not just giving them inbound sales training, but showing our agents and teaching our agents a different model of how to communicate more effectively,
how
to really build that.
So for those who are listening that are saying, well, what's the Bank model? So Bank is a personality science that I actually got certified in last year myself. And it is a psychology-based tool that has been re-engineered specifically to understand and perfect the science of buying. So how do people make buying decisions based on four very distinct personality styles? So the fact that the inbound sales representatives are going to be having the support of this system to be able to tap into this, that's where the beautiful connection happens, because when we understand what it is that the inbound call is really going to focus around based on the personality of the person calling in, then we can tailor the conversation and the connections happen, and sales velocity, which is a process that I coach on through the Bank iOS program, is really helping to speed up that decision. It's giving the person the information in the fashion that they want it based on their personality style, so they can make a very quick decision. So from a client standpoint, this is an added bonus. It's a unique element that Tristan is bringing in. So I applaud you for that. And from a client standpoint, just let's share a little bit about an ideal client for you. They've got some sort of course, program, high ticket item. You mentioned coaches, course creators. So I imagine that it's those people who are just at the cusp of realizing that they have so many leads coming in now because they've done such a fabulous job marketing their program, getting really clear on what issue or problem they're solving, and that they now have so many inbound connections and calls, or they're launching their program and they don't have that process figured out. How am I going to handle all those calls? That's where you would want to connect with them. Is that the right point?
Exactly, Yvonne. And yes, as you had just, mentioned, and thank you very much for that excellent description of really what our ideal clients look like, because yeah, you're bang on. That's exactly what we are. Those are the types of clients that we are looking to really work with and establish relationships with. And having a very, from the coach's perspective or from the client's perspective, having a very clear messaging early on in their sales process, in their client attraction process, is critical. And I think that goes without saying for any product that's being sold. If you want to attract your ideal client, your messaging has to be crystal clear. So the prospects are already sold before they've, even gotten onto a call with us. How we definitely help elevate and build on top of that is that with typical sales structures within a coach's small business, they have a team of maybe 3 to 5, sometimes larger, sales teams. However, with a small team and a large influx of leads coming in, there's no possible way that you can get to those leads quickly, efficiently, and still keeping that fire burning inside the prospect that made them want to get on the call in the first place.
Mm.
And that really is critical. Timing is everything. And that's where, there's such beautiful opportunity for even for the clients that have a sales team that's existing already, funnel them into GIC. Have them working under our umbrella. They're still going to be, and they'll be busier probably with GIC and have a very diverse range of products and clients to serve with that experience that they're bringing with them from already working with those clients and coaches.
So in the example where in today's world with COVID, there's a lot of events happening. So in the case of having a virtual summit, for example, I did a 2-day virtual summit earlier on this February. In the case of coaches, consultants, transformational agents that are leading a summit, would it be a smart thing to have your team in place already so that on day one in the morning or day two in the morning, in the afternoon, whenever you're making that offer, that the team is standing by, ready to take all those calls and solidify and make sure that they have the questions answered to be able to get on board and make the buying decision?
Yeah, it's so easy to have your, like, the client's program plugged into our system within less than 24 hours. So if you know that you've got, like, if coaches are planning these summits or these virtual events, and they know that they're going to have a large surge of new sales leads coming into their pipeline, most definitely plug into GIC prior to the event, 2 days, maybe 3 days prior, to give us some time to make sure that we are crafting the client account and making sure that everything is running smoothly.
Excellent.
And that's, you know, that really is one of the big components, because we've simplified things on our back end system within our call center.
Great.
To make it so much easier for people to get involved.
Well, I love what you're up to. It sounds like a very smart decision to be tapping into having that surge, that peak, embraced. And so you're not, I mean, nobody in this world right now can afford to lose warm leads, hot right. leads as well. So where can they reach you? It looks like you have a Facebook page, you're on LinkedIn, you're on Instagram. Where's the best place for someone to reach out and get in touch and connect with you, Tristan?
The best place to have that direct interaction with myself or with my team would definitely be on Facebook, on our business page. And it is facebook.com/GIC Freedom, FREEDOM.
Okay.
And obviously, come to our website. Visit our website at www.globalinboundclosers.com.
Great. So, and globalinboundclosers.com. I'll make sure that those go in the notes. And then very often at the end of our interview, I like to offer my guests an opportunity if it's something that you wanted to, you know, sharing with the audience members, any gifts or anything that you wanted to give away. I'm certainly happy to give away a 3-chapter excerpt of my best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. And you can actually go and pick that up on my website, which is wordswomenandwisdom.com. Spelled out A-N-D in the middle, wordswomenandwisdom.com. And just click on the red button where it says free chapter excerpt, and you'll be invited to join my Women and Wisdom VIP community and receive that download. Anything final to add as we wrap up, Tristan?
I would love to have more people reading Your Childhood Zillionaire. It is a terrific book, and especially when you're coming from a past that, you know, has wounds. We all have our war wounds. There's no doubt about it. But through those war wounds, we also have beautiful aspects of our personality from childhood that grows with us, that grows into us as adults. And those are the strong confidence building elements of our personality, or the strong creative aspects of our personality that needs to be nurtured and brought out. And when they are, you see magic happening. Mm. And when those incredible dynamic personality traits are at the forefront of everything that you do, that is when you truly see a gorgeous culmination of success, abundance in so many different areas. Abundance doesn't always have to be financial abundance, but those are growth patterns that I have written about very clearly, and different personality traits are highlighted in the book, Childhood Zillionaire.
And how do they get a copy of that?
I will definitely be offering a copy of that. You can get the copy on either Kindle or the paperback copy on Amazon, but I will be offering a PDF version of the book on our Facebook page. So if you go to our Facebook slash GIC Freedom, We will be offering, I will have a link built into the site that will give you access to the PDF version of the book. So.
Okay, so go to GIC Freedom on Facebook, like that page so that you can keep in touch with Tristan as this offering is rolled out and expanding globally, and also to receive a free copy of her childhood, Your Childhood Zillionaire, helping you identify your highest paying personality traits and showing you how to get paid for those traits fast. Thank you, Tristan, for joining me today. It's been a pleasure, and I'm so glad that you are helping to support women in domestic abusive situations to be able to break free. What a valuable mission. Thank you for joining me today. It's been a beautiful connection, and wishing you great success with GIC Global.
Thank you so much, Yvonne. It's been a pleasure being here. Bye for now.
Bye for now.